I'm Brian Karam, and I've spent decades covering politics. Now I'm taking you behind the scenes, one interview at a time.
Join us as each week Brian confronts the issues that matter, posing the questions you wish you could ask. No filter, no agenda, just the truth.
We're not here for sound bites. We're here for substance. Join me, Brian Karam, every week as we cut through the noise and get straight to it. This is Just Ask the Question, where curiosity will lead us to the facts.
Subscribe now on your favorite podcast platform. And remember, when you want answers, all you have to do is just ask the question.
States have set up prescription drug affordability boards to help lower drug prices. Colorado just became the first state to cap the price of a drug, Enbrel. What happens next? Our guest, Vinny DeMarco from Maryland Healthcare for All, is here to talk about it. Welcome to Care Talk Live, where we talk about how healthcare works or doesn't work in America and get you answers. I'm Laura Packard, cancer survivor and healthcare advocate, here to help you. Please text or call in your health insurance and healthcare questions at 202-838-6837, and our experts will answer them in future episodes. Be sure to subscribe to my channel or podcast wherever you get your podcasts to get next week's Care Talk show. In today's episode, Vinny DeMarco talks about upper price limits for prescription drugs and what that means for you. So welcome, Vincent DeMarco, the president of Maryland Healthcare for All.
Thank you so much, Laura. Your show is really great and serves a great purpose for people. Thank you for doing it.
Well, thank you for joining us. And let's start with a refresher on what is a prescription drug affordability board and what does it do?
Well, Maryland, I'm proud to say, was the first state to enact such a board in 2019. And the goal was to make high-cost drugs more affordable by putting an upper payment limit on what Marylanders pay for high-cost drugs. The idea is to create a board that would examine the high cost of drugs and how they're hurting people. And when a drug has an affordability challenge and is just not affordable the way it should be, the board would have the authority to put a cap on what people pay for the drug.
So there are affordability boards in several states now, but Colorado is the first to set an upper payment limit. What exactly is an upper payment limit, and how is this going to affect patients in Colorado?
Well, it's a great question, and there are actually four states, Maryland, Colorado, Minnesota, and Washington, that have prescription drug affordability boards with the authority to put an upper payment limit on what people pay for high-cost drugs. Colorado, Minnesota, and Washington have the authority to put an upper payment limit on what everybody in that state pays for the drugs. Maryland, we could do it for what state and local governments pay until next year, when the authority will expand to allow them to help everybody. What Colorado did on October 3rd is very, very exciting. They said that this certain drug, Enbrel, which is a very important autoimmune deficiency pill, was just too highly priced for the people of Colorado. It was over $50,000 for a year use of the drug. And they decided, the board, after a thorough examination, listening to consumers, listening to the drug industry, listening to everybody in the community, they concluded that what they wanted to do with the drug Enbrel was say, whatever you want to make your price, you make price whatever it is, but we in Colorado are paying no more than essentially what Medicare now pays for the drug under the Inflation Reduction Act, what's called the maximum fair price. So remember, under the Inflation Reduction Act, Medicare negotiated with the drug corporations, including Amgen, the maker of Enbrel, and came up with an amount much less than what they were charging. And it's around $30,000 instead of around $50,000 that will Coloradans will pay a year for this drug. Now, I want to emphasize, most of that is paid by insurers, not individuals. And that gets reflected in people's premiums. I know in Maryland, one third of our premium costs and our major insurer is high cost drugs. So advocates did an analysis of what does this upper payment limit mean for Coloradans. And based on analysis of claims data, they concluded that Coloradans will save over $32 million a year because of this upper payment limit. It's very, very exciting that they did this. And in Maryland, we are hoping that soon, maybe as soon as next couple of months, our Prescription Drug Affordability Board will set upper payment limits for two other drugs, Jardy and Sinfarsiga, which were also on the Inflation Reduction Act list, for what state and local governments can pay for the drug, which will save taxpayers money. And then next year, they can apply that to everyone. So that's what happened in Colorado. We are hoping that other states will follow this lead, particularly right now, Minnesota and Washington, which have prescription drug affordability boards with this full authority, will take the lessons that Maryland and Colorado are providing and set upper payment limits for drugs. Now, both Colorado and Maryland are starting with Colorado with one, Maryland with two. But that will, we hope, expand quickly to other drugs to make sure these high-cost drugs are affordable. Because as you know, Laura, drugs don't work if people can't afford them. And what these boards are doing is making sure these drugs are affordable.
So when are people in Colorado actually going to see a difference, either in what they pay at the pharmacy or in what their insurance company pays for their drugs? So, you know, Enbrel, there's an upper payment limit now that is established in Colorado. When will there be change?
Well, that's an excellent question. Remember, this is new, and we're trying to figure out as we go. It will start taking effect January 1, 2027. So that's between now and then, the board will work with insurers and everyone else to figure out how the systems are set in place to implement this upper payment limit. Now, Amgen, the drug corporation that makes Enbrel, did file suit. They had previously filed a suit even before the upper payment limits were issued, and the courts threw that out saying nobody's done anything yet. As soon as Colorado board implemented its upper payment limit or issued it, they filed suit again. We are hopeful and expecting that the Colorado law and the Maryland law and these others will survive court challenge. One of the basic arguments in court that the drug corporations make is this violates what's called the Dormant Commerce Clause, that a state can't get involved in this interstate commerce of drugs. However, because it's an upper payment limit, it's just affecting sales within Colorado or in Maryland, wherever your state is. So we're very confident that it will survive the legal challenge. Now, the other argument that the drug corporations make against upper payment limits is if you do this, then we won't have enough money to afford the research to make life-saving drugs, which is completely untrue. We had commissioned a study by Public Citizen, which shows that the top 10 drug corporations in 2022 spent $20 billion more that year on advertising, profits, and other kind of self-aggrandizement than on research. So the money is there to make these drugs more affordable and do the necessary research.
Why do pharmaceutical companies, how do they explain why they charge Americans so much more than they do for people in Europe and people in every other country? Why do they think we should be paying more in the first place?
Well, one of my heroes, former Congressman Elijah Cummings, who's now passed away, hauled a bunch of these drug corporations before his committee in Congress and asked that question. And one of them brutally said, because we can. And that is it, because they can. These other nations where people pay so much less for these drugs have essentially upper payment limits. You could charge all this money, but we're only going to pay a reasonable amount. We need to do the same thing in the United States, which the Inflation Reduction Act does for Medicare. Why can't we now not do it for everybody? For everyone else should have the same benefit that Medicare has and that these other nations have, is to simply say we will only pay a reasonable amount. You know, other entities like insurers are regulated. There is rate review. There are limits on how much they could put into non-healthcare needs, healthcare uses. Drug corporations are not in their pricing. This is changing. The Inflation Reduction Act was a big start, and now prescription drug affordability boards are continuing that to help everybody.
So it was really hard. It was a long and hard fight to get the Inflation Reduction Act passed, which just negotiates prices on a few drugs that are for people on Medicare only. Do you see a path for making prescription drugs affordable for everybody? Or are we going to continue to see prescription drug boards in specific states that are willing to do something, but nothing for the tens of millions of Americans that don't live in one of those states?
Well, that's an excellent question, Laura, and it's a question of political will. And we hope that the example of Colorado, Maryland, hopefully soon Minnesota and Washington, will show voters all across the country that upper payment limits work and that they should elect people, Democrats and Republicans, independents, whoever their party, but they should elect people to office who will support these policies. And nothing will make that happen better, I believe, than the evidence of these policies working and people seeing that they can better afford these drugs. So I'm hopeful that once this starts happening very well in a few states, it will spread around the country and hopefully nationally also.
Can you explain a little bit? Trump is insisting on most favored nation status for some drug prices nationally. Can you explain a little bit how most favored nation status is the same or different from prescription drug affordability boards putting limits on drugs costs?
Well, I just want to caution, I'm not no expert on what's going on at the federal level. I do know that the Inflation Reduction Act actually set limits on what Medicare pays for these drugs. And prescription drug affordability boards do the same thing. Some of the proposals that President Trump is setting out there don't do that. And they ask the drug corporations to do these things, but they don't require them to do anything. And that's not going to work. The president also proposed some direct-to-consumer sales, which sounds nice, but vast majority of us can't afford any of these drugs without insurance. It goes through insurance. And what we need to do is go right to the heart, which is what is being charged by the drug corporations. So we want everybody involved in this, Democrats and Republicans, and we want everybody to see that the best way to make high cost drugs more affordable is do what's working in Europe and Canada, upper payment limits, what's working now with the Inflation Reduction Act, and what's working in Colorado and Maryland, upper payment limits. It's the best solution.
Well, we will keep an eye on what happens in Maryland, where there may be upper payment limits in the next few months, you said, and people in Colorado will benefit at least from Enbrel price limits, although I assume more are coming next year. So what can or should people do if they live in a state that has a prescription drug board that hasn't really done much yet, or if they live in a state that doesn't have a prescription drug affordability board at all?
Well, it's good questions. If your state, well, there are only four states with boards that have the authority right now, Colorado, Maryland, Minnesota and Washington. And if people are interested, they should go to those websites and they're easily findable, Prescription Drug Affordability Board and your state, and let the board members know that you want this action. In Colorado, say thank you and let's do more. In Maryland, Minnesota and Washington, write to the boards and say, let's follow Colorado's lead and use these upper payment limits. There are a couple other states, New Jersey and Maine, for example, that have these boards, but without the authority yet. They're doing research and they're figuring out. People should contact their legislators and say, give these boards the authority to do what Maryland and Colorado are doing, or upper payment limits. And in other states, you should contact legislators and say, follow the Maryland and Colorado lead and create a board with upper payment limit authority. So the best way for legislators to know that this has to be done is if they hear from you. Contact your legislator. And I believe once they know that this is something that people really want, that these boards happen and they have upper payment limit authority, it will start happening.
Well, thank you so much for joining us, Vinny. And please come back to tell us more as Maryland and Colorado and other states move forward.
Thank you. Thanks for your great work. I look forward to coming back.
And now, welcome to Diane Archer, founder and president of Just Care USA and senior advisor on Medicare at Social Security Works, and Louise Norris, health insurance and healthcare reform analyst at healthinsurance.org, where we will answer your health insurance questions. So let's start with Diane and Medicare open enrollment, which began just a few days ago. And already the Washington Post has reported problems with the government's online provider directory for people looking at Medicare Advantage plans. So what's going on?
What's going on? It seems to be what's always going on, Laura. What's going on is that it is absolutely not to be trusted, the provider directories for any Medicare Advantage plan, whether it's online through Medicare.gov or it's directly through the Medicare Advantage plan. The providers in the network are constantly changing. The directories have been found year after year to be erroneous and misleading. And if you want to be sure that the doctors and hospitals you want to see and have your care covered by are in network, you definitely want to follow up with those hospitals and doctors directly. And with one caveat here, which is that they can actually leave the network in some instances mid-year. The doctors can for sure. And often hospitals at least give notice halfway through the year. So just be aware that in Medicare Advantage, you cannot trust a sales agent. You cannot trust a directory. You cannot trust Medicare.gov. Go directly to the providers you want to be able to use. And that's just a perfect segue into saying that with Medicare Advantage, be prepared because everything can change, including prior authorization rules and costs the prior authorization rules at any time. So be prepared for that during this open enrollment season. And we can talk more about other stuff further in the program, but I do want to piggyback on what Vinny was saying on the prescription drug pricing, because there was just a report out today, I believe, from the Congressional Budget Office, a government agency, saying that we are losing $8.8 billion in drug savings from Medicare drug price negotiation as a result of the Big Beautiful Bill. That legislation actually keeps Medicare from negotiating the price of certain high-priced drugs, including Keytruda, a big, often used cancer drug. And so, yes, Medicare is now, thanks to the Biden administration and the Inflation Reduction Act, negotiating the price of a few drugs every year, a few commonly used high-priced drugs, but not nearly enough of those drugs. So that's true for Medicare as well as Colorado only doing Enbrel, but also these, you know, it's not clear if even those drugs that have negotiated prices have prices that are anywhere near as low as what people in France and Germany and England pay for their drugs. And the question becomes, given that Trump has said with words that he doesn't think it's fair that Americans are paying more than people in other wealthy nations for their drugs, which I think we can all agree is true. I mean, this is something that really is unfair. Why should we be paying anything more? And why shouldn't all people, not only people with Medicare, get the benefit of low-cost drugs?
Agreed. And as Vinny pointed out, prescription drug affordability boards are part of a solution in some states, but we need to have the will to come up with a solution for everybody in every state. And the hard part, the reason why politicians have not done anything to lower drug costs is because pharma has so much money and power. So unfortunately, they stopped price negotiation for Medicare for many, many, many years. And finally, we got that through. But it's going to continue to be a fight because they just have so much money, and elected officials listen to that.
Yes. And I just want to add one thing that was very compelling, an argument a colleague made to me many years ago for why our prices for drugs should be no higher than people in other wealthy countries. We have a Food and Drug Administration, and we import food safely from abroad all the time. And the issue of safety should not be an issue in terms of the importation of drugs. In fact, a lot of the drugs that we pay high prices for are already manufactured abroad. So the world is flat. We import, and we should be paying whatever other countries are paying for these drugs.
Yep. We just need the will to use our power to negotiate better prices. Yes. So next, Louise is going to talk about the Affordable Care Act tax credit extension fight, which is related to the shutdown, which we've talked about several times before. But where is it at currently? Because many people, including myself, have insurance through the Affordable Care Act, and we either have a letter or we'll be getting a letter soon saying that our insurance rates are going up a lot next year.
Yes. So this is an issue that states and insurance companies have been begging Congress to take action on for months, but nothing has happened yet. And it is the crux of the shutdown issue, just in terms of Democrats saying they will not vote to end the shutdown until there is something in place to extend these subsidy enhancements. And so far, Republicans have not gone along with that. So the shutdown continues, and we also are still in limbo on what's going to actually happen with these marketplace subsidies. And just to quickly sum it up, if the subsidy enhancements, if Congress does nothing and the subsidy enhancements are allowed to expire, they will revert back to the way they were in 2020 and previous years. In terms of the structure of how the subsidies are calculated and the fact that people with income over four times the poverty level will just no longer qualify for subsidies, regardless of how expensive their health insurance is. And so in some cases, that leaves people paying 30, 40, 50% of their income for health insurance, which is not affordable. Right now, the Democrats are pushing for just a blanket extension of what we have now, preferably permanent. But there are some compromise discussions going on. For example, there are discussions of a temporary extension that would just push it out a year. There are discussions of maybe allowing an extension, but having a minimum payment that people have to make, so you can't get zero premium plans anymore. There are also potential compromise discussions being floated around extending the subsidy enhancements, but with an upper income cap. So we don't really know first of all, we don't know whether anything is going to happen. And second of all, if something does happen, we don't know exactly what it will look like. This could range anywhere from just letting the current, what we have now, expire, all the way to extending what we have now permanently, or anything in between. So the issue we have is that open enrollment starts in just a matter of days, November 1st. It actually is already underway in Idaho, where it started on October 15th. So, and in in several state-run marketplaces, people are already able to go on the marketplace and window shop. Obviously in Idaho, you can go on and enroll for 2026, and in several other states, you can go on and look and see. how much your price is going to be next year. And people are experiencing a lot of sticker shock from that. Some of the state-run exchanges have said that the ship has sailed. It's too late for them to, they can't turn on a dime in terms of updating their pages, all the details, getting all the new rates in, especially since we don't know what compromise solution might be reached. So it's impossible for the, you know, you can't have a backup plan for every contingency. So they have to wait and see what Congress will do and then update the shopping platforms to follow suit. And we did see this in 2021 when the American Rescue Plan first introduced these subsidy enhancements. It was not immediate. Depending on the state, it took several weeks or even a couple months before the subsidies started getting loaded into people's accounts and recalculated for everyone. The one silver lining here is if they do extend these subsidy enhancements, even on December 31st, everyone will be able to qualify for them all the way starting on January 1st, even if you already signed up for a health plan with a lower subsidy amount reflecting, you will be able to get back the money you're supposed to get. It's just a matter of the concern is folks who pick a plan that's maybe not the best option for them because it's all they can afford based on what's reflected when they first go in to shop. Or an even bigger concern is people who go into shop, say on November 1st, if these subsidy enhancements still aren't sorted out at that point, they might look and see all the available options are not affordable and they just decide, I can't do this, and they log out and they never return, and then they're uninsured next year. So the marketplaces, if something happens later where these subsidy enhancements get extended, the marketplaces are for sure going to be doing the best they can to reach out to people to try to get them back in to shop, but they know some people will fall through those cracks. So this is the concern since we are so close to open enrollment right now. So I think my message for consumers is if you have a marketplace plan, yes, go in and start looking at options as soon as open enrollment is underway. If you want to get it done and select a plan, go ahead, but don't just then forget about it. Keep an eye on whether things are changing, whether there's any update to this, and you may end up deciding to go back in and pick a different plan later in open enrollment if anything changes. So just stay tuned.
Thanks, Louise. And next, going back to Diane to talk about how some Medicare Advantage plans are leaving the marketplace altogether. And so what that means for if you are on Medicare Advantage and your plan is leaving, you have an extended open enrollment period until December 31st, which is longer than the Medicare open enrollment period that's going on right now. But there's no auto enrollment into a comparable plan. So if your Medicare Advantage plan is leaving and you don't sign up for a new plan, you will be put into original Medicare, but there won't be a Part D for prescription drugs and there won't be a supplemental to cover the costs that original Medicare does not cover. So Diane, what is happening for people whose Medicare Advantage plan is leaving and what should they be doing right now?
Okay, so good question, important question. And there's good news and bad news for these people. Obviously, it's nice to have continuity. Unfortunately, as we were saying, Medicare Advantage plans don't offer you that reliable continuity that you get in traditional Medicare, sometimes called original Medicare. And that's because the Medicare Advantage plans are run by corporate health insurance. This year, I think more than any prior year, they are looking to maximize profits, these insurers, by shedding some of the Medicare Advantage plans that they don't see as profitable, as well as shedding a bunch of the quote unquote extra benefits, as well as in some cases, raising premiums and other out-of-pocket costs. And getting rid actually of some of the more generous Medicare Advantage plans. So I guess the good news, as you mentioned, is that you're automatically put in traditional Medicare if you're in one of these Medicare Advantage plans that's ending. The Wall Street Journal has said it's 1.2 million people who are conceivably affected. It's good news because in traditional Medicare, you have choice of doctors and hospitals anywhere in the country. So you can be sure you're going to be able to be covered from your doctors, certainly from your hospitals, and almost all of the doctors. And that's a good security for people. In addition, your out-of-pocket costs are fixed, 20% for your medical services, and you do not, as a general rule, have to deal with prior authorization. You will be able to get the care your treating physician and you believe you need when you need it without delays and without inappropriate denial. So that's all good. The problem, or the other good news, is that you can buy Medicare supplemental coverage. And that is something that you can't always do depending upon where you live and your health status. But because your plans are ending, you have a guaranteed right to buy supplemental coverage, sometimes called Medigap, through your state health insurance marketplace. And so that's the good news. The bad news is that that costs money. And it's not an insignificant amount of money. I was just looking, and I think on average, like a low-cost plan, a high-deductible plan G, for example, which makes you pay $3,000 about out of pocket before it kicks in, is $56 a month. So that adds up. In Medicare Advantage, you don't have that. On the other hand, if you end up with a costly condition, traditional Medicare is going to end up costing you a lot less because the Medigap that you buy is going to pick up most of your out-of-pocket costs, if not all of them, after you've paid your deductible. Whereas in Medicare Advantage, not only are you going to deal with inappropriate delays and denials of care and then be forced to pay for care out-of-pocket yourself, but the out-of-pocket cap for covered services can be as high as more than $9,000. It's usually around $5,000-$6,000. So you have higher out-of-pocket expenses and a harder time getting care. This is all a very long way of saying, Laura, that if you can afford traditional Medicare, the Medigap is what you're going to be paying for, and also you probably want a Medicare prescription drug plan, as you had mentioned. That is going to be your best option in terms of health security, in terms of knowing you're going to get the care you need from the doctors you know and trust when you need that care and having your care covered. If instead, though, that's just too high a cost for you to pay, I would suggest two things. One is contact your member of Congress and say, this is not acceptable. I should have a meaningful choice of traditional Medicare. It shouldn't cost me so much more upfront than Medicare Advantage. It should be the same upfront costs. And two, look for another Medicare Advantage plan. Now there, what I say is that it's very hard. It's almost like throwing darts to choose the one that's right for you. It's impossible. I couldn't do it for you, because there are all these unknowns. When are you going to get your care delayed when you need it immediately? When are you going to get your care denied when it's completely medically necessary and your health is at risk? So you're gambling with your life in some instances. But what you can do is talk to your doctors and your hospital and find out which Medicare Advantage plans they're affiliated with, and maybe go with one of those, knowing that at least you'll be able to see the providers you want to see. But then there's the question of cost and how much are you going to pay out of pocket for your hospital care? How much are you going to pay out of pocket for your drugs? Those are other factors to consider. So this is just too hard for any normal person to have to deal with. That's why traditional Medicare is so much more preferable. It's easy access to the care you need when you need it, but it has become for many people just unaffordable.
Well, thank you for that, Diane. And thank you everyone for joining us today to learn more about us and open enrollment and our healthcare system in general. Please text or call in your health insurance and healthcare questions at 202-838-6837, and we'll answer them in future episodes. Join us next week for more on healthcare in America. Be sure to subscribe to my channel or podcast wherever you get your podcasts. My name is Laura Packard, and this is Care Talk.
I'm Frances Callier.
And I'm Angela V. Shelton.
And we're Frangela.
You know what you need in your life? The Final Word podcast.
Yes, you do.
That's right. It is the final word on all things political and pop cultural.
Where we make real news real funny.
Where we inspire you so you can hashtag resist.
Subscribe and get a new episode of the Final Word podcast each week. It's the news we think you need to hear.
That's right. We think you need to hear it. Okay.
Yeah, it's what we say so.
That's right. And because all we do is give, every Thursday you can listen to our hysterical podcast, Idiot of the Week.
We round up the stupid because you know what? Somebody has to.
Okay. All we do is give.